Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, American Grand Prix post-race edition. And goodness gracious me, did we have an amazing event in Austin. Now, let's talk about it. And it's not just me. It's not just Matt. It's Tommy, the WTF1 founder, founded it from his bedroom over 10 years ago. University, weren't you, Tommy? Anyway, and Katie Fairman, the WTF1 editor. Both myself and Katie are a little bit sleep deprived after the US GP starting at 8 p.m. What the hell is that about? I know there's going to be a lot of comments going, wow, you look at you, Europeans, you're not being able to do one late race. No, we can't. We're not used to it.
Yeah, I know. I was the same. I kind of covered it in the last podcast as well when we said it's really bizarre having qualifying, especially it was at 10 p.m. for us. And I 100% know that everyone other side of the world is going, oh, boo-hoo. You don't get one race at lunchtime. Fair play to everyone that does this on a regular basis, because especially the ones, you know, when people are watching it at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. But this one was worth getting up for. I would have got up myself because it was that good. It was just amazing.
It was. It was interesting finding things to do in the time to wait for the race. But then once the race had finished, I just had boundless energy. I was just so hyped because it wasn't a brilliant race, brilliant USGP.
It was indeed. And welcome along to our Team WTF1 members who are in the chat right now. If you fancy joining Team WTF1, we get exclusive podcasts live like we are right now. And lots of other things, karting, clubhouse at Silverstone, where you camp with us for the British Grand Prix. Loads of stuff. Go to WTF1.com/Team WTF1. Now, let's dive into some serious action. I mean, action. It's difficult because a lot of it was just suspense. But either way, my three-word race review, Max Crucial win. I don't know if that's the... I feel like I've used something very similar in not that many podcasts ago.
Yeah.
Maybe even the same three words, but it is.
I remember reinforcing your point.
I think it was crucial podium or finish for the Russia one. I'm sure it was. Yeah, I think it was similar.
Maybe. But don't know. Either way, I feel like, yes, I am repeating myself slightly, but it is a crucial win. Because
you're just such a Max fanboy. You just want to talk about Max, don't you?
All right, mate, look at the line in your background. I think genuinely, obviously, as we get towards the end of the season, every win is crucial, but it seemed as though Max was very much against the odds with the strategy that Red Bull had to play after Lewis getting him into turn one, and he just made it work. And I think another three-word race review is a champion's drive, which is what I kind of tweeted, because it was one of those where he had relentless pressure on him the entire race once he got the lead. And obviously Hamilton was maybe on a bit more of a preferential strategy, having fresher tyres towards the end, but managed to hold on without any sort of mistakes. And if he's able to do that with what is now five races to go, I think he's ready. He's ready to be a world champion. He seems almost too cool.
He did. He kept his cool a lot in that race. We came into the US thinking that this is going to be Mercedes track. You know, they've scored, they've got a win here every single year in the hybrid. Pole here every year in the hybrid era, because Kimi Raikkonen took that sneaky win in 2018. We thought this is probably going to be a Lewis Hamilton win, maybe a Valtteri Bottas win. And then Red Bull just rocked up and were like, you were expecting us? And Max Verstappen, he did. He put on a fantastic performance, kept Lewis Hamilton back. I know that there was a little worry, should we say, going into the race, because obviously they were both lining up on the front row, and turn one has seen its fair share of action over the last few years. And we spoke about it on the podcast we did before the race, saying that there was a small part of us that were thinking, could they come together? Like, obviously that's not what we wanted. We want to keep this championship battle alive. But yeah, Max did a brilliant job. Great call from Red Bull on that strategy. And we now go to Mexico and Brazil, which are in theory Red Bull tracks. But this season has proved that absolutely anything can happen. The rule book... oh, my God. Can you tell I'm on like 2 hours
again.
Sleep?
I'm about to put my headset on charge, and I think you need to be on charge as well.
I'm a low battery. The rule book has well and truly been thrown out for this season. I'm going to have a little micro nap while Tommy makes his point.
Yeah, the significance of that victory, like you said, Matt, it was a champion's drive. It's very easy to be in, you know, once you've got that race winning car, it's not as easy as just being able to win a championship. There's so much pressure. Let's not forget, this is the first time that Verstappen has had a car capable of winning a world championship. And for him to pull off a drive like that, six rounds to go when the pressure's really, really on, Lewis Hamilton, who just seemingly, you know, he could well be out of this title, but is just not backing down, putting him under so much pressure, chasing him down. It did almost feel like at one point that Red Bull completely got the wrong strategy and he was going to be a sitting duck. And for him to get that win, extend the title lead, and just look so cool about the whole thing, it's such a significant win for him right at the end of the season when the pressure's on, like you say as well, like a Hamilton stronghold as well. You know, Red Bull haven't won there in the hybrid era. So very, very impressive drive.
Yeah, and you could almost say that winning around COTA, when you expect this to be a Mercedes strong, a strong Mercedes track, and then as we get towards the end of the season, Red Bull have usually been quite good as well. Of course, we've got two tracks that are completely brand new that we don't know where the form is going to lie. But generally speaking, like Abu Dhabi, for example, Red Bull have been quite strong in the past there as well, haven't they? So, you know, it's going to hopefully, fingers crossed, come down to the wire. But it feels as though, obviously, coming into COTA after Turkey, we were thinking, actually, if Mercedes sorted something out here with their straight line speed, they looked a lot quicker. And you're kind of thinking, oh, is this now finally Hamilton and Mercedes like stretching their legs and going to basically run away with the championship? But Max winning around COTA is something that none of us expected. I think we all expected Mercedes to be the quickest team, and they weren't. At ground underscore 096, is that the best drive by Max Verstappen? In terms of leading from the front and, you know, fending off all the pressure, I think absolutely. You know, you take into account the whole scenario of where he is in the championship, leading by only a few points, knowing that if he loses a position to Hamilton, it's a big swing in Lewis's favour. I would say certainly.
Yeah, I'd agree. It may not be as exciting as something like a 2016 Brazil, where he had that amazing wet weather drive. Obviously, we know with the driver of the day votes, people much prefer when someone starts 20th in an amazing car and finishes fifth, as opposed to just dominating or even just having a race from pole and winning. But for Max to do that, like you've mentioned and we mentioned earlier, in a championship fight, Lewis Hamilton driving as well as he is, you know, Hamilton is arguably in the prime of his career. Like he's raised his game. I think you said it in IBR as well. You know, both of them are just raising their game.
Thanks, darling. You should do that.
I had time to this morning. but the thing is, they've both raised their game, and they're just building each other up. So they're both just driving unbelievably well. And for Max to beat Lewis like that, yeah, for me, it's definitely the best win of his career, just because of the, like I say, the significance of it and how he did it under enormous pressure and the circumstances of it being so close to the end of the title. It is a proper statement of like, I am championship worthy. I'm not going to bottle this under pressure or anything like that. It was an amazing drive.
Yeah, I very much share the same view as both of you two. I think that was a phenomenal drive from Max. We're lucky we've seen some really brilliant drives from him so far this year. You know, there's been no shortage of exceptional drives from him, which I think is when you look at the ABCDEF1 rankings, Max Verstappen seems to have an A or an A star for almost every single race this year. But yesterday was something else entirely, really, like you say, a championship drive. And he now goes to Mexico with, I think it was a 12-point championship lead, which is the biggest lead we've had since Austria, which seems so long ago. And it really probably was only a few months ago. But yeah, a great drive from him.
Was indeed. At Isolation Gamer 1, was Max getting the DRS off of Mick what saved him in the end? If he wasn't able to get the advantage, would he have lost? No, I think Mick, if anything, cost him more time by not getting out of the way. And there was, of course, he got DRS, which allowed him to, you know, open his rear wing once. But I feel like Mick was the backmarker that, you know, just made Max lose a little bit of grip, because he was in front of him for maybe two sectors. So yeah, for me, I think Mick lost Max more time than what he gained back with DRS, because I think you only gain about 0.2. And I know Max was a bit of a sitting duck with his straight line speed, but no, I don't think Mick was a help at all. If anything, it seemed as though he was trying to help Lewis win the race, which I don't see that connection. If that was Sebastian Vettel chasing down Max Verstappen, there'd be all kinds of conspiracy theories. But no, I don't think he helped at all.
No, what Mick did say after the race, he's like, I couldn't really disappear. And it's like, well, you probably could have like pulled away. Like,
yeah,
there was
plenty of occasions.
Mazepin was, I think, about 80, 90 seconds behind him. So, I mean, pulling over to the side is not going to cost you 80 seconds unless you really, really mess it up and end up beached in some gravel or something like that. But like you say, Verstappen was able to get some DRS. Verstappen also said afterwards that he kind of understood why Mick did it. He said, you know, it's his right to sort of be there on the track. And he also said that he thinks he would have been fine had Mick been there. Had he not been there, either way, he would have been like no problem. But I think, well, Christian Horner said that he felt like he was going to have a heart attack in that penultimate lap.
Same.
Schumacher, yeah, not getting out of the way. And I think he's represents all of us F1 fans, because we were just like, oh my goodness, if this whole, like, it'd been hyped up the whole race of like, in the last three laps is when it's going to be like nail biting and super intense. And then you see Verstappen getting stuck behind one of the lap task cars and you're like, oh my God. But it was fine. I feel like I'm just saying words. They're not really making sense.
Well, I wasn't being rude, Katie. I was trying to fix my headset. Constantly beeping my ear saying, I'm fed up with
you're
what
like,
Katie's saying.
Not again.
Goodbye. But no, I'm sure what you're saying, Katie, is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty bad driving from Mick, to be honest. I think if it was Mazepin, I think everyone would have been roasting
have
him for, yeah,
that, yeah,
had his head. And because I put the tweet out and I almost went a bit more cheeky with it and said that Mick doing everything he can to make sure Hamilton takes his dad's record for winning this title. Yeah. So I'm like, surely you want Verstappen to win this title so Michael's record stays. But regardless of that, you know, he's not in a race with anyone. And I understand he's doing his race and shouldn't just jump out of the way. But it's not the easiest track. It's quite a single file. You know, there's a lot of single file lines at COTA and it's very dusty off track. But I thought it was a bit poor from Mick. And I was the same as Christian Horner, where I was like, oh my God, Mick's about to cost Verstappen the win here. And Hamilton's going to get DRS at the end. And then, yes, of course, he was, I think Mick was extremely lucky that Verstappen ended up getting the DRS and pulling away, because that did save him somewhat. Because if he hadn't, I do think we would have had a moment where Hamilton was getting DRS on the final lap down the big long straight. And then I think Mick Schumacher would have been an accidental, it would have been a lot more of a thing. And it would have, I imagine certain fans of either side wouldn't have been particularly happy if, you know, a Haas is getting in the way, is deciding the world championship. But that is the margins that we're having this year, that these races between Hamilton and Verstappen going down to the wire, the traffic was so crucial actually during the whole race. We'll go into this a little bit later with how much action there was, but I almost wanted to see more of Max and Lewis, but there was so much action going on in the midfield that they understandably showed a lot of that going on as well. But you almost didn't see any of Lewis taking the gap down. But that, I almost wanted to see that, because it's quite interesting, because you knew that every single back marker would play such a huge part. And it was just such a tense and amazing race.
It was indeed, yeah, absolutely. And you make a very good point about if that was Mazepin, I think there'd be a lot more people basically losing their minds on Twitter. But alas, yeah, Mick should have got out of the way. I obviously, we don't know what exactly his team said to him, but if you're hearing Verstappen is coming up, you know, he doesn't know the whole complexion of the race, Mick, in that particular situation, being in last place, and he's well within his rights to carry on. So there is the argument that, you know, he's not going to know that Verstappen and Hamilton are, you know, Hamilton's got 8 lap fresher tyres and it's coming down to the wire. But at the same time, he definitely could have done more to get out of the way. At Ty Kangas 30, what is more important to the teams, the Constructors or Drivers' Championship? Even though Mercedes still has a decent lead in the Constructors, it seems all of the attention is on the drivers from both teams. Well, to the teams, the most important is the Constructors, because that's where the money is. It's not through the drivers. Of course, it's great to have a Drivers' World Champion, and it's great for the brand and that sort of stuff. But the teams is where the money is handed out by Formula One, and it's a lot of money. So that's why that, you know, team orders come into play quite a lot throughout the entire field. So yeah, it's weird that people think that it's complete attention on the drivers, because if it was complete attention on the drivers, they would have pit Perez, put him out behind Leclerc, made him set the fastest lap, and taken a point away from Hamilton. Like, if they didn't care about the constructors, they would have sacrificed.
They did that at Silverstone, didn't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's very true. But they didn't do it for Austin. So
yeah.
You would think that, you know, if they're going eggs all in one basket for the drivers, they would have sacrificed the podium to take that point away from Hamilton, but they didn't.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I stand on this, because I think it's maybe a little bit... I feel like it's changed a little bit this year, because a little bit, and I know you, like you mentioned just then, that they didn't do that, but they did do it at Silverstone. And for me, it does seem that the teams are a bit more favoring the drivers, as opposed to
I just need to plug this in.
Yeah, sure, no worries. For me, I feel like Toto and Christian Horner have both been really, you know, made it clear that the drivers is the thing they want this year. And I know that, you know, they get the prize money and all this, but I think it's going to be a fascinating situation if the Constructors' Championship stays really close, what they'll do. Because when I was talking about a few different crazy scenarios, you know, if there's only a few points between them going into the final race, we could, in theory, get a ridiculous and crazy situation where Perez and Bottas almost have to decide, and Red Bull have to decide whether they almost sacrifice the Constructors' Championship to help the drivers going into the final race. And then we'll see that firsthand, which one they prefer. Because for me, the driver's one is the one that the fans and the media and everyone get more involved in. So while the Constructors, yes, they get the money, it's almost... not irrelevant, but because the marketing and everything, they'll probably get more money from marketing and have a Drivers' World Champion.
You reckon?
Yeah, I don't think they care as much. I think Mercedes winning a Drivers' Championship with Hamilton is so much more valuable to them than winning the Constructors' Championship. And same for Red Bull. I don't think Christian Horner gives one beep about the Constructors' Championship personally.
I'd slightly disagree on that last point. I think it would be good for Christian Horner, because obviously they secured all those Constructors' Championships with Sebastian Vettel. And then they've gone through a bit of a dry patch with Mercedes just completely dominating it. And I think that it would be a nice sort of full circle to come back round and say...
I'm not saying they don't want to win it, obviously.
No,
I'm
saying
they'd sack it off if Max could win the title.
You think that's like, okay?
I'm sure there's a lot of pressure as well from the Verstappen side of the garage to make sure that, you know, Verstappen is one of the youngest world champions. And it's been very evident as soon as Verstappen came into that team that that was the aim, is to try and get him to be the youngest ever world champion, which I don't know if he's too old now, which sounds absolutely obscene because he's literally still so young.
I can't remember if he's missed it. I'm sure the chat will remind us. Here is a theoretical situation for you both then. They're going to the last round.
Let's close our eyes.
It's Abu Dhabi, the title finale. Sergio Perez is third or something, and Lewis Hamilton set the fastest lap. And if Sergio Perez finishes third, they can win the constructors' title, but Verstappen doesn't win the driver's title. But if Perez pits and takes a point off Hamilton, Verstappen wins the driver's title. Are Red Bull going to pit Perez or not? I say yes, they would.
I feel like it'd be a very difficult conversation, Tommy.
It would. Mm. It would.
I would not want to mess with Jos Verstappen, standing there, you better.
I'm just looking at the 2016, because this is the only one I could find, prize money distribution. And the difference between first and second in 2016 was $20 million. Like, that's a lot of money for, you know, I guess, the inner workings of Red Bull. And well, yeah, I guess for Haas,
but they're not first or second. They're selling, they're selling £20 million worth of Red Bull if Verstappen in Holland alone. If Verstappen wins the World Championship,
Holland is sold out, Tommy. Holland is sold out.
I know, but
you do pose a very good question.
I want to hear what the chat thinks as well. That would because personally, in my head, I think they would do that. I think they would sacrifice the constructors. To let Max win the title.
I think so too, but I think it would be a very difficult and long discussion before the race as to all of the possible scenarios, because there are going to be people in Red Bull going, "You're doing what? How much are you throwing down the toilet potentially?
What now?"
I think Christian Horner as a racer, and obviously Verstappen is their wonder child. I do agree. I just think that it would be a very difficult decision, and not 100% either way.
Yeah. Oh, this is a difficult decision. I'm glad I'm not a team principal. I'm glad I'm not in Christian Horner's shoes. But I mean, normally this time of the year, Mercedes have wrapped up the Constructors' Championship, haven't they? In fact, I think they said it was in Cota in 20.
Yeah. Well, they're a lot closer now, Red Bull, because of that race. It's not out of the question now, which I thought it almost was at one point, but just saying the chat are 100% with me.
Yeah, I know. All right. Cool. Yeah. No,
I suppose
I'm not saying.
I know. It's not
a clear cut decision as what people might think. That's basically what I'm getting at.
I guess for both teams, the marketing is great, because if Lewis wins it, he's an 8-time world champion. He's got the most driver championships ever in Formula One history. That comes with probably a lot of sponsors and marketing and all that kind of stuff. And same for Red Bull, if they can say we have a world champion in our team now, and here he is, and he's really great, then that's also going to bring in more people. So works both ways.
I think it's an interesting idea. Yeah, and I think to be fair, I think in my head, obviously this is just my opinion, Red Bull, I don't think have any kind of, not any discussion. They obviously discuss it, but I think it's almost like they would go for it. Whereas Mercedes, I totally agree. I think they would be a bit more, they'd have the discussions, because obviously they're on this amazing winning streak, and it would look amazing to be like X times constructors title, because, you know, that could potentially even carry on after Hamilton retires. And then they have this, you know, constructors winning streak of about 11, 12, 13. Yes. Whereas for me, Red Bull, it's just, get the driver's title with Max. So
okay, no,
yeah, we'll see.
I agree.
We'll see. I hope it does that, because that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Although at the same time,
Mercedes are the one that are going to be sacrificing the drivers to go and win.
Well, I was just saying, I don't really. However much it would be absolutely insane, I don't really want the title to be decided by Perez pitting for a fastest lap.
Well, no, but then obviously Mercedes would then probably pit Bottas. It would be absolute carnage. And it'd be like the Formula E blooming finale. It was in season one when they just had that bit of a farce ending. Season two, sorry. You can tell I watch a lot. Right, next question. Actually, was that a question that we've already covered? Did I ask that question? I can't even remember. That was what I asked.
Yes, it was.
Tommy, your three-word race review, please.
Mine is more two stops. And, well, it's exactly what it says. It's just a showcase of how much better F1 is when it's a two-stop race. You know, there's more strategy variation. Overtaking is quite difficult at COTA, despite being, you know, a good track. And in theory, it's quite, should be easy. And, you know, there's quite a bit of passing in the midfield, but it's very dusty offline. Saw how hard it was for Max and Lewis, even when they had an advantage behind each other, they couldn't really get past. So, when you've got that strategy, it just throws another curveball into the mix. And it's not really much more to say than that. Just, I think it's just, F1 is just so much better when you have that two-stop, because it just makes the race more entertaining, more strategy. And you get that level of jeopardy again. I think that's almost going back to Turkey. Maybe wasn't the race we expected, because everyone's just saving their tyres. You do one stop and pit. Whereas this race, it just shows that more pit stops equals more excitement.
And not too many though, Tommy. We've seen the four stop era in Canada and all that good stuff, where the tyres were falling off after five laps or whatever. So two stops is just about right, isn't it? It's not forced entertainment. There's enough strategy elements for undercuts, overcuts, wumbling free, all that stuff. So I don't know why I just used a Teletubbies reference. That was very odd. But yeah, so
Teletubbies.
Yeah, isn't that
Wombles?
Underground, overground, wombling,
wombling free.
That's weird because I was in a, We Will Rock You, and I swear it, I then said in the script because I was the bad guy, and then I said, "What did Poe and do they say?
Tinky Winky."
Yeah, and maybe it's two different things.
Where's this going?
Underground, overground, wombling free. Okay. Anyway, I don't know where I went with this, but we move. That's the beauty of this podcast. Yeah, more two stops.
Yes. Well, we had Sonoda and Science on the soft, so they were Poe in terms of colour. And then we had the rest of the grid on the yellow Lalas. God. But yeah, I agree. I thought it was a good mix of people. I mean, I still don't understand why they put especially Science on that soft tyre, and I don't think Science really understood either. But it did mean that we had a really interesting strategy decisions made there, and then with the two stops and bringing Max in so early. Like, I think most of us watching that were like, surely that's either like a bluff or something along those lines, but it ended up working out pretty well. And Red Bull are doing, like, they've seemed to have just really nailed it now, where they're bringing in Max earlier than Lewis and managing to make that strategy work. But yeah, yesterday's race, it was particularly, I think it was like lap 10 or something he came in, which out of a 56 lap race is pretty early.
Who was that, sorry?
Verstappen.
Verstappen. Yeah, was, I think we, really saw, we saw pit he stops
in,
early.
He was in before Sainz, who was obviously on the soft, which was,
and we saw like pit stops from lap 8, didn't we? I swear there were some people that were coming in.
Very early.
I guess it's because they knew that they couldn't do a one stop. Two stops was the quickest way. But then there was clearly some leeway as to exactly when you wanted to do that. So kind of obviously Max saw that as the opportunity, so that he then, if he waited for Lewis to pit, then Lewis would have always had track position most likely, because I guess Lewis is technically undercutting himself, kind of, you know what I mean? To defend his position basically. Yeah. So yeah, interesting stuff. Two stops were, 100% the way to go. Unfortunately, it's very difficult for Pirelli to apparently do that. Whether that's, you know, Formula One telling them not to, I don't know, but surely it's not too difficult to make a two-stop, make, you know, it should just be two stops. But then again, we have spoken about this before, making it a mandatory two-stop is something we didn't want. We just want a natural two-stop, right?
Yeah. So I think not forced, we were talking about tires off, we're talking about tires a lot after Turkey, and how Esteban Ocon was able to go a whole race on the inters, and I was saying that I missed the element of like one stop, two stops, and the variety that brings. So yeah, I don't want it to be like, yeah, mandatory, like you say. I just want it just to happen naturally, just like let nature heal, that kind of vibe.
To heal, just
have the,
so tired.
Yeah.
Oh, really, I'm lagging here, guys.
I was just gonna say that, yeah, we're it's probably asking a bit too much from Pirelli to be able to make the exact, you know, in a
why?
Perfect,
it's their job.
Yeah, but just make the tires softer or something, just to give us two stops.
Just a smidge.
Please. Go on.
Just a smidge soft. No. Right. Anyway, moving on. Team WTF1 member R Dun Zero. Did today's race show that if there weren't blue flags, Max maybe couldn't have won? I mean, taking that one particular incident on its own, maybe. Maybe Lewis would have got onto the back of him. But we had many, many back markers throughout the entire race. And without blue flags, it would have been chaos, most likely. I'm kind of for blue flags in that situation, because I feel like that would almost, I don't know. I just don't think it would sit right. Maybe it's just because I don't like change. But I don't know. I feel like it would impact the race too much in a way in which it's not really fair for maybe the lead drivers.
Yeah, I think blue flags are a necessary thing in Formula One. I know that they're not used in other championships, but for Formula One, I think that because of the extremities. Oh God.
Yeah, come on, Casey, you can do this.
I can do it. That, you know, we see the Haas get lapped, you know, twice every race, and it's quite a common thing to maybe have the top 12, like below the top 12, have been lapped. I can do words.
If you want to hear the rest of the podcast from the sofa, just let me know. All right.
Yeah, I really
am.
I'm really sorry to everybody. The quality of this podcast has gone down the toilet. But
That was question. Race one. Carry on.
To answer the question, I think Max probably still would have won had there been no blue flags. Thank you for your question.
Wow. Okay, that was really insightful.
Yeah, it's too hard to pass in Formula One without blue flags. I mean, even as woeful as Haas are, you know, you saw it. You know, if Mick kept avoiding blue flags, he could stay ahead of Verstappen for quite a few laps. That's how hard it is to pass. You know, or at least, you know, half a lap. And then, you know, you get into the midfield. I can't remember exactly where they would have lapped up to, but I don't know if you guys know who they was the highest person they lapped, but say it was, you know, a McLaren or an Alpine or whatever. Not an Alpine because they retired. But it's going to be so hard to pass, isn't it?
I've just spilt half my water down myself.
The highest person to be lapped was Yuki Tsunoda in P9.
There you go. And, you know, an AlphaTauri is a good car. And regardless of Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton being a lot quicker than Yuki Tsunoda, the dirty air as such, you know, is so bad that Yuki could probably hold him off for quite a while, which we actually did see because they were in a battle of their own and they struggled to get past. And it's not just, you know, just because Max got blocked, Lewis would have been exactly the same. If anything, we've always talked about how the Mercedes seems worse in dirty air than anyone else because they're used to winning from pole. So I think it's just the nature of it. And I'm glad that blue flags are in operation because you just get a ridiculous situation where they can't pass and it just ruins the racing.
Maybe it'll work when we get the new regs and they can follow closer, fingers crossed, and maybe blue flags won't be needed then. We will see. Next question, at Chris One Up. Are the Mercedes strategists good enough? Wow, that is a straight cutthroat question if I've ever seen it from Chris. Yes, they are good enough. They had to, well, we're explaining it in a video actually going out this evening. So please check out the Overcut Undercut F101 going out. But for, you know, live team WTF1 members, you're getting the inside scoop from the video. There was no way for them to have reacted to Max after that one lap. Max had made enough time up so that if Lewis had pit the next lap after the first round of pit stops, he would have lost position to Max. And not only that, if they'd pit him straight away the lap after, he wouldn't have, he'd have one lap fresher tyres, which would have done very little when you go up against Max in what looked like a slightly better car around Cota. So that's why they had to decide to go longer to then execute the overcut in the second round of pit stops, where they were then, was it 8 lap difference, I think, between the two tyres? So that gave them an opportunity to win the race. If they'd just followed suit with Red Bull, they would have stayed second and they wouldn't have had the pace difference. So, and it seemed as well, I think, when we were watching the onboards of Mercedes in practice and in qualifying as well, that they'd loaded on the understeer to try and allow for the tyres to last a bit longer, you know, because that's what they tend to do is, if you know, they give a car a lot of understeer, that means that they then don't wear the tyres as much because there's not as much, I guess, load going through it. I'm not going to get too technical because I don't understand. But you know what I mean? That is something that they do. And clearly they were thinking if they get jumped, if Max goes ahead of them, they want to try and make this overcut work. And I think that was the only viable strategy available to them.
This is peak F1, isn't it? Like the strategists, you're only as good as your last race. You know, two races ago, we were lauding Mercedes because McLaren messed up their strategy. Lando lost the race. Mercedes pitted Hamilton and, you know, were lauding them for how good they were to, like, basically Lewis, you coming in, this is 100% the best thing to do. And they pitted him. And we were all saying, you know, Mercedes, this is why they're 7-time champions and so experienced and all this kind of stuff. And then this time it doesn't work out. And we're saying they're terrible. And then next week, because Red Bull and Mercedes are so close, this undercut and overcut has happened many times, happened in Bahrain. You know, Mercedes, you're almost being behind. You're the one that gets to almost try something a little bit different. And sometimes that plays brilliantly and sometimes it doesn't. And that makes the racing so good, actually, this year, is that we've had that where someone behind can't overtake, so they'll do an undercut or an overcut or whatever. And, you know, it happened in Bahrain, Barcelona, Paul Ricard, here. It's just happening all the time because they're just so close on track and it gives the opportunity of the car behind to try something. And when it works, they're the greatest strategists in the world. And when it doesn't work, they're apparently terrible and everyone questions whether they're good enough or not. So yeah, to answer the question, yes, they are fine. And I'm sure they'll pull an absolute blinder in one of the final six races.
And then they'll have the question of, are Red Bull good enough?
Yeah, 100%.
Literally, it's like swings and roundabouts. I think Mercedes strategists are definitely good enough. Like you say, there's a reason why they have so many constructors championships and have managed to help provide their drivers with so many drivers championships is because they know what they're doing and they are one of the best, if not the best. It's just that Red Bull have pulled things out of the bag this year. They've played them at their own game. Yesterday, I don't think that Mercedes probably could have pitted Lewis any earlier than they did Max. And obviously towards the end of the race, Lewis pitted and was on the fresher tyre, which we all thought meant he was going to close that gap and then lead to the overtake. So that didn't end up happening, but it was still, in my opinion, a sensible strategy call. It's not like they decided to, I don't know, double stack the Mercedes at the same time. And then that led to somebody getting held up. And like, there's nothing dramatic that means that they've made a terrible decision in that race. It's just a case of Red Bull, a bit like the, talking of like Texas Cowboys, American theme, the Wild Wild West, they were the first to pull the gun, draw. That's the one. So yeah, it was a good job from Mercedes, but an even better job from Red Bull.
First to pull the gun. Lovely stuff.
I mean, it's technically pulling the gun out of a holster.
I guess so. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm making my own sayings up. It's fine.
Why not? Yeah, look.
Why not?
This is a safe space in this podcast.
It only goes out to a few people.
Next question at Spitbox. Is COTA actually a good track? Most of the passes were in the pits or under DRS, and those that weren't almost always resulted in someone being pushed off the track. How do you guys feel about the track overall? Personally, I'm not a fan. Well, Spitbox, I'm not sure if you watched the same race as I did, because I love COTA and I think it's a brilliant track. It's amazing to watch in qualifying. You have the S's like at Silverstone, you have the back end of the track where it's like turn eight at Turkey. You've got an awesome corner just before that turn eight at Turkey-esque sequence of corners where you can take maybe three or four different lines into that double left hander just before the Nico Rosberg spinning under from a gust of wind corner.
Is that the official name?
Yes, that's what it's officially named after.
It's
that
a plaque,
after
a blue plaque on the corner.
But I genuinely really like COTA, and it's one of my favorite tracks on the calendar. I don't really ever say it, it doesn't really spring to mind, but when I actually think about it as a track, I think it's great. You've got a massively long straight, you've got a straight down the front as well. Turn one is so unique with how high it goes and then it falls away again. I think it's brilliant.
It is a good track. I do like it. I wouldn't say it's up there with like in my top five or anything like that, but there are certain elements
sixth.
To it that I do really.
I'm going to say
seventh or eighth maybe. But it does normally deliver a pretty good race. And like you say, there's sort of really good bits from other great tracks that have all sort of been thrown in. There are some bits like the straight, sometimes I maybe feel are a little bit too long, but generally it has provided us with great racing. And like you say, with this question, I thought that the overtaking yesterday was brilliant. Like there was, I mean, I'll go into my three-word race for you in a minute, but there was something happening almost every lap. And I won't waffle on too much because otherwise I'll just explain my whole three-word race review. But I really like COTA. I think it's a great track.
Yeah, I agree. It's a best of, isn't it? They've done it deliberately. It was all part of the plan that, you know, one
master plan.
Part of it is meant to be turn eight. Then you've got the bit that's meant to be like Maggots and Becketts. And it's almost like a best of track. So, yeah, agreed. Newsflash. F1 is really hard to overtake and almost every circuit is terrible because the dirt air is so poor in these cars. And for a track, yeah, I mean, if that's not a lot of overtaking, you're not going to enjoy the final few races. Although I guess Interlagos is a good track for passing. But you know, we have this discussion a lot of like, is the track good enough for passing? The cars are just awful for overtaking. And you know, there's things they can do and next year is meant to be better. We'll find out. But I wouldn't say that COTA's, you know, terrible. And I thought there was quite a good amount of on track overtakes, like Katie said, going to review, but there was almost too much going on that the TV didn't know where to look.
TV direction was not great. But I'd much rather have somewhere like COTA on the calendar than something like Sochi. Although we had a fantastic Russian Grand Prix this year, like the chances of it being great, you know, it's been on the calendar for X amount of years and we've had one good race. Whereas COTA, I feel like, normally delivers something every year. So, yeah, please think. Like, we're not planning on getting rid of it. In fact, we're just going to add more American races to the calendar. But
we are. Yeah, safe to say. Yeah, I think, COTA yesterday really did have everything. Katie, what's your three-word race review?
My three-word race review is it had everything.
I'm sorry. I saw it coming up and I'm
that's
sorry.
Carry fine. On. I'll let you on. Yeah, so that's my three-word race review because, as you said, we had a battle at the front. Who was going to take the win? That was exciting. We had strategy calls up and down the grid. We had fantastic overtaking. Special shout out to Fernando Alonso because, my God, I haven't laughed so hard in during a race for his team radio and him basically just giving a middle finger to the FIA at this point, which is really funny. Yeah, just generally, like, I thought it was a great race. There's so many performances from up and down the grid, though, that I feel have gone really unnoticed because there was so much going on. Charles Leclerc, stunning performance to keep that P4. Daniel Ricciardo. Oh, also, the bit at the beginning with the McLarens and the Ferraris was amazing. Sebastian Vettel going from the back of the grid to P10. Yuki Tsunoda did a decent job. Like, I'm sure I'm probably forgetting other people, but there were so many great stories from that race. And yeah, TV direction didn't do it justice, but to be fair, I think they would struggle to do justice to just everything that happened. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you for
that was all my energy that I've bottled up since this morning.
I love every single statement you've made in this podcast so far. You've then said thank you afterwards.
thank you for sticking around.
I'll be back in 10 minutes. It did have everything. It was a really great race. The midfield were mental. I was absolutely convinced that Lando Norris was taking out Charles Leclerc with that dive up the inside, with how the corner very much bends to the left quite significantly. It's more than a 90-degree left-hander, that one. But got away with it. And they fought hard. And then, of course, we had the Danny Ric and Carlos Sainz fight, which was then swept away from the mini box. And we just had to wonder what had happened. Very much Lance Stroll from Monaco vibes. I was very surprised to not see a safety car with the amount of craziness that was going on in the midfield, to be honest. Alonso and Giovinazzi, as you say, I mean, that was just becoming a bit of a farce in the end, wasn't it, really, with Alonso just basically driving off the track and hoping that the stewards wouldn't say anything. It's so weird that he's almost like calling, not trying to call their bluff. I don't know what he's trying to do. Like,
you
know,
embarrass them.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. But I don't think he was actually right. I think that with the way he was fighting Giovinazzi, he was forced off the track. Was it Kimi?
Yeah, he pushed Kimi off the track.
He was still on the track. Well, he came back on the track and took the position back. Alonso then later just drove off the track.
And overtook and then was like, yes, what a move.
It was people, so obvious.
People completely misunderstood. One of the tweets I did on WTF1, I don't think it translated very well, but there's a term, S-housing, is the phrase, which I think is used in football quite a bit for, you know, people that bit of gamesmanship, but it's like an endearing and it's a funny thing that, you know, it's kind of humorous that you just almost have to laugh at how ridiculous it is. And Alonso perfectly epitomizes that because, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's there to almost, I feel like him coming back into F1 is all, obviously, you know, he's there to win and do well, but part of it as well is just to be like, all the things that annoy me about F1, I'm going to like bring up and just cause chaos. You know, I hate track limits. I'm going to just cut the first corner and then say, well, this is actually technically fine, so you can't come at me and all this stuff. And I absolutely love it. I think it's hilarious. But also at the same time, I genuinely burst out laughing when it got on the radio. One, yes. Possibly think
it's the most obvious thing.
It's just Alonso being Alonso, and I love him for it.
He's gone from being Fernando, you know, complaining about GP2 engines and whatnot, to now just absolutely ripping into the stewards. And I'm here for it, to be honest. And then Alpine were getting involved as well, weren't they, with the FIA team radio being all sassy with Michael Sassi. And that sort of exchange was incredible. Like, oh, so we're allowed to overtake off the track now? No, we're not allowed. Brilliant. You're not allowed to overtake. It was amazing.
Hell, he was there like, oh, for God's sake, why did we allow this to be broadcast? Because obviously these kind of these conversations have always been able to happen between the FIA and the teams. But now they're broadcast, which is just, I think, the best thing F1's maybe not ever done. But in terms of broadcasting, that is a bold claim.
FIA team radio, the best thing F1's ever done.
Yeah,
amazing.
But no, it's certainly very entertaining for us fans listening into these conversations. And yeah, you can just imagine Michael Massey sat at his desk being like, no, that's not okay. And like, I keep just jabbing at it. But you got to remember, Michael Massey isn't the stewards as well.
That's true. Yeah, he's literally passing it on to the stewards. Mm. I'd love to see a comparison of how teams spoke to Charlie Whiting and how they speak to Michael Massey. I guarantee it's very, very different. And I think Michael was probably at fault for that because of how he set the tone from what we saw anyway. And, you know, he was the one that kind of led this whole sassy sort of responses. And I feel like the teams haven't particularly responded well to that. Anyway, moving on. Question from Team WTF1 member King of the Cassell 55. If Checo's drink was working properly, could he have challenged Lewis for P2? No. Moving on.
Why do you not think so?
Because Lewis was 1.4 seconds off Max. Perez was reasonably
on
the pace.
I'm going to be Team Perez here because he was really under the weather yesterday. He said that he'd had some sickness and diarrhea in the morning, which, you know, but maybe a bit of a TMI when you drop that in the sky interview. I was like,
driving
oh,
a car
I'm
with
literally,
diarrhea.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah,
I hold it in with G-forces. It's fine.
That's gross. but yeah, he was saying that he'd been really unwell and so he'd been making sure to hydrate in the morning. And then going to the grid, it was evident his water bottle was leaking, like he had to change his racing balaclava, but thought it had been sorted. And then imagine knowing that you've got to go around COTA, which is a massively demanding track. Like we've seen the G-forces that you get around some of those corners. It's ridiculous. The track is mega bumpy. It's super hot. You're feeling like absolute shit already. And then you have to go around with absolutely no water or any kind of fluid. And like there are moments on the team, like camera that he has on the top of his car, you can see him, he's having to open his visor as he's driving down some of the straights because I'm sure he's just absolutely like flushed and feeling completely exhausted. He said by lap 20 that he was like pretty much ready to give up, so for him to power through and still maintain P3 I think is an absolutely heroic drive from him. And when you compare it to somebody like Valtteri Bottas, yes, I know that he didn't have the best quality. He also had a sixth ice change. But like, what did he do from the back? He didn't come up and challenge Perez, you know, who's having a terrible day and take that third position. So I'm going to defend Perez, managed to keep Leclerc back, who looked, you know, fairly strong throughout the weekend.
I appreciate that, Katie. That wasn't the question, though.
I was
more than happily going to jump on that exact same bandwagon. It was more the fact that, no, he wasn't going to challenge Lewis for P2. I think that he would have sat in P3 quite happily and not been challenged by Leclerc. But yeah, not to have his drink is insane. And the fact that he was able to get to the end, especially with how he looked in the post-race interviews, to just get to the end was a miracle. And the fact that he was unwell as well, I mean, I can only imagine that adrenaline was the only thing keeping him going. King of the Cassell, Max and Lewis were in a completely different league. Even if Sergio was completely well, I don't think he's within 10 seconds of those two. But, you know, that's just a running trend of the whole season. That's not me being necessarily negative.
I think he would, yeah. It's one of those things. I don't think he would be up there with Lewis and Max. I think the gap, the 44 second gap is massively exaggerated. I think not just because he's unwell. At the end of the day, he was being used, wasn't he, to help Max's strategy. He didn't really get to do the strategy he wanted, but
he was on the same strategy as Max, though.
Yeah, but I don't think you know, they pitted him, didn't they? And then they put the mediums on and they wanted to try and sort of make Hamilton stop, didn't they? That was like Max's
plan. I guess he had to push hard at the start of his stint.
Whereas I think, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but you never know if like, if Perez could have done his own race, maybe he would have done his usual, I'm just going to stay out, do a one stop and might have gained quite a bit of time or done something a bit different. But at the end of the day, he's got to play the team game to help Max. And I think he did that perfectly, you know, and that's what got him. So the 44 second gap is, I think, is, I saw a lot of people going like, oh, 44 seconds, that's, you can't say that's a good drive. But for me, it is because of him essentially sort of not running the race he wanted to, and also the fact that he had diarrhea.
Yeah, that's not nice at all. And let's not forget horrendous. As well, his qualifying was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it when he almost took pole position. You've seen that in our qualifying watch along with me and Katie, if you tuned in. But obviously, ending
I
up
did
P3.
Watch that.
I asked you a question, you didn't respond, so that's cool.
Because I was watching it and then I saw Perez go fastest and then I like popped you guys on, turned the sound up.
And
wanted to see your reaction to it because it was just, and I think you were like, what can Perez do? Can he go second? Oh my God, he's gone pole. Perez just looks so much more on it. We did our pre-race podcast and it was saying that he's now not almost just copying Max's setup and he's now sort of doing his own thing with the car, which is probably why he's doing so much better. And I also think that Adrian Newey is also back from a bit of a break. And I don't think it's coincidental that Red Bull have sort of got very, very quick again now he's back, because he is a genius. Obviously, there's a lot of people at Red Bull, but he is an amazing an F1 legend. So it was a good, almost the perfect day for Red Bull. Obviously, they'd have loved him to be P2, but it's not unlikely as we know. But that's where they need him. They need him to be this every week now, where they can play two against one rather than it being always the other way around.
Exactly. He played the perfect team game. I don't think P2 was up for grabs, but he allowed Max to win the race perhaps more comfortably than what would have, because I think Lewis would have gone further in that before the first round of pit stops, maybe he would have gone a little bit longer. But of course, with Sergio, who was within touching distance at that point, forced him into that strategy. So
I didn't actually know if Perez, you know how like Perez was dropping back. I did see a few people saying like, oh, is this Perez like dropping back to potentially, you know, save his tires and do the one stop, but then he came in anyway.
I don't think a one stop was possible. Did anyone do a one stop?
I don't think so, no. But it is Perez, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. But that was never possible because of the fact he was pushing to make Hamilton stop. I don't think that was ever on the cards.
Exactly. I think if he hadn't have had to push to make Hamilton stop, maybe there's a very small chance. I'm trying to think back to Portimao, where Perez was the only one that did that one stop strategy and it allowed him to get to the front. I feel like now Perez, hopefully, seems to be, you know, back and driving really well, that we get to see those sort of crazy things again, when they can make him do a one stop when everyone else can do a two stop, and it puts him at the front. And if they've got that to play with in the championship battle, that's going to be amazing for Red Bull.
Yeah, I just don't think he's got the confidence in the Red Bull to pull that kind of performance out just yet, maybe. Because he managed that, obviously, in the racing points and whatnot. But that's when he was, I think, in the peak of his career. He had confidence. He won a race in Bahrain, all that good stuff. It'd be good to see him get back to that. And then he can be a massive factor. But there's only five races to go, so he's going to have to do it pretty quick. At Eric Gentilella. I almost read that wrong. Can we get clarification on the pushing another driver off the track rule? I feel like this has happened in many races this year and it feels unclear on what the consequences are and who is punished. It would be cool to know when it's okay to push a driver wide and when it's not. I'm sorry, Eric. We are as confused as you are. it seems as though there is one rule for when you push a driver onto the gravel. Take Austria as an example with Lando and Perez from a couple of years ago, wasn't it, that one? And that we've seen many where it's like, if the other driver has more of a consequence, which is not what it's supposed to be, then they'll get penalized. But if they're pushed onto a runoff and can carry on, then it's fine.
It just changes every week, doesn't it? The problem is every incident is different, however much we want to compare, but no rule is the same, which makes it difficult. And also, but I do totally understand that it is just confusing, because it seems, you know, 1 week Gasly understeers into Alonso and gets a 5-second penalty, and then the next week there's collision between someone and there's no penalty. And yeah, that's, I mean, before we go into another inconsistency FIA rant, that's just Formula One, I'm afraid. I think it does just make a mockery of, it does almost make a mockery of track limits. And I think that almost is what Alonso's sort of deviously playing at, to almost, he's making it his sort of parting gift to before he retires from F1, just to basically show how ridiculous these track limits are, and how it's completely farcical, because it's almost like they've had to start adding these tarmac runoffs for safety, but there's never been almost a solution or the correct procedure of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And it seems to change every single week. And it's almost like they need to put in some concrete rules for tarmac runoff, excuse the pun.
Hey. yes, like you say, without going into another FIA rant, and I've had a few people tweeting me saying, I can't wait to hear Katie go off an FIA rant about track limits this week, but I'll try and refrain myself. But yeah, essentially, the FIA's inconsistencies throughout the season has made it almost impossible to know what, like, unless it's a very evident you've broken the rules kind of thing, what the actual outcome will be. I do understand where Fernando Alonso is coming from, because he saw Austria, prime example. Ricciardo was the one that used the track, like went off the track, and in Alonso's eyes, managed to pass two or three cars, gain an advantage, come back onto the track, and nothing was done about it. So Fernando being Fernando, he took the opportunity in Sochi and, you know, went through turn two, through the little runoff area, and rejoined the track. Bearing in mind, Alonso wasn't the only driver to have done that on that one. I think people like Verstappen and Giovinazzi also did the same, but I understand that Alonso was the first person to have done it.
And took it 150 miles an hour.
Well, I never actually ended up seeing the onboards of the other guys, so they might have done a very similar thing.
Oh, no,
but
they did not. Alonso, he practiced on the formation, like, didn't he? He literally practiced it. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, fair play. If there's a rule there and you can exploit it, like, as blunt as it is, that's Formula One. That's what teams up and down the grid are doing with the technical regulations and the sporting regulations. If there's a loophole, then they'll try and use it. But this weekend, Fernando, in my opinion, was in the wrong. You know, he pushed Kimi off. And I'm amazed that there wasn't actually a worse outcome from that little tussle on track. And then to do it with Giovinazzi as well, like, it's just made him look a little bit silly, in my opinion. I totally am with him on his other sort of criticisms of the FIA, but I think that one was maybe he took it just that little bit too far, as entertaining as it was. Not really how it works. But yeah, it's just the FIA have made their lives extremely difficult, because who knows what the result's going to be. Like, even Pierre Gasly last race in Turkey, we talked about it on the podcast. In my opinion, that was a racing incident that wasn't worthy of a penalty, but they've done it. And now that's going to be used as evidence for races or years to come. And it's just, I just want everything to just start from scratch.
It's okay, it's Katie. It's all right. Let's keep smiley faces on. It's okay. We had a good race. Okay.
We did. It was a really fun race.
You can go to sleep now if you want, Katie. It's fine. It's fine.
We're going to get through ABCDF1 and I'm going to get my motivation back, and then I'm going to take a nap on myself.
It is interesting. If it was someone else, not Fernando Alonso, who's known for, you know, his antics and whatnot, if a Verstappen or a Hamilton's doing that, the world would explode. Like, especially if someone straight-lined Russia turn two and did what Alonso did, I think we'd have a completely different story. But because Fernando, for whatever reason, is accepted as this kind of like warrior of the, I don't know, the people, I'm not sure. But it's a very weird
warrior
thing.
Warrior of the people.
Yeah, there you go. That's his new title. But I do find it strange because it was petulant in around America. And, you know, because it didn't go his way, he kind of just started basically playing up, which, yeah, I mean, it is great to watch. And it's, you know, it's, oh my God, he's challenging the stewards. But at the same time, I think if he continues to do this, people will go, like, for example, Mexico turn one, when he straight lines that and takes the lead, he'll have found a loophole about something or other, won't he? So
he'll be reading
my prediction.
Sporting wrestling. Yeah.
I did actually. It was in my mind somewhere. Next question. L Penguin 147, opinions on the Danny versus Science tussle. Personally, I thought it was just hard racing.
Yeah. Robin is racing.
But once we finally saw the replay, it's just racing. I don't think it was really unfair. It's quite, it kind of chokes a bit, doesn't it? It kind of gets narrower in that section of the track. So look, they're just fighting hard and Danny Rick just absolutely sending it. Love it. I don't think there's much more to debate on that.
Just Danny Rick things, I think.
Yeah, it's such a good battle. That's what I love, that sequence of corners at COTA. I'm looking forward to, hopefully, the cars being even better to, like, well, I say even better to overtake, able to overtake in that section, because you can take different lines through it and almost, you know, block the exit. And yeah, that was a great bit of racing. The one that I was most confused about was that I'd not seen here, or I don't think many people mentioned it, but the Science bit where they told him that he needed to let Lando through and he went, nope. And then nothing ever happened of it. They're just like, okay. Oh,
because
he let
Danny Rick through, didn't he? Even though I thought it was an amazing overtake, that it turns out that Science said, yes, I let him through. I'm not sure how much truth is to that, but he did open the door, to be fair, to go up the inside. So
I guess it was Ferrari and Science successfully essentially changing the FIA's mind that they didn't need to do it, and they were like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, you're right, actually.
Very,
which is
odd, isn't it?
Odd, but I guess
just steward things. Right, am I right?
Yeah. Buy you a bottle of tequila in Mexico.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Right, let's press the button.
Now it's time for
ABCD, and now it's time. Okay, here we go then. ABCDF1. Let's try and swiftly get through this, shall we? Lewis Hamilton. A. Right, can we do this? I don't think we can, but can we do this?
No,
one
no
from
chance.
One. The fans gave him an A as well. Valtteri Bottas. C.
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 Fans. C. Two from two. Max Verstappen, B.
A star.
A star. A triple star. A quadruple star.
Yeah.
No, yes. A star.
A star.
And the fans gave him an A star. Sergio Perez, A.
A.
A. But A star for battling for illness.
No.
Realistically, an A.
Okay, come on. We can't be bringing in colds and, you know.
Colds and flu.
Running tummies. And the fans
you
gave him
an extra grade
A
for
as,
diarrhea.
Well.
Stop using that word, it's horrible.
he did a great team job. Lando Norris, yeah, very, yeah, bit of a quiet weekend from him. C.
Yeah, anonymous, really.
C.
Got outqualified and beaten by Daniel Ricciardo, which has not happened that many times this season. The fans gave him a C as well. That's 5 from 5, everybody. Daniel Ricciardo, A.
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 And the fans gave him an A. 6 from 6. Charles Leclerc, A.
A star.
Oh, no.
You absolutely... I was doing
ruined
it. I was doing it for the synchrony.
No, A star, 100%.
You absolutely disgust me. A star.
No context of ABCDF1, me saying Charles Leclerc A star and Matt going, you disgust me.
Well, look, I was halfway between, but I wasn't sure just purely because I think
what
the Ferrari...
could he have done?
I just think the Ferrari had a bit more pace than they screwed Signs rather than... I think Leclerc did amazing. But
fourth. He was 50 seconds off. I think he's scraping an A star. No, I don't think. I think maybe.
A high A.
Okay. I think he's scraping an A star for me.
I've gone for an A as well. I haven't gone for an A star.
Not a fanboy.
Literally not a fanboy. I mean, A is still a great grade.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll take that.
And the fans gave him an A as well. So you're the fanboy, Tommy.
Yeah. Charles Clare fanboy, that's me.
Carlos Sainz, B.
Yeah. B.
Okay, and the fans gave him a B. Sebastian Vettel, A.
A.
I've gone for B.
You can tell with the just slight pause.
Yeah, the pause.
There's like, that's not going to be an agreement.
I've just seen the fan. Yeah.
He did really well. Don't get me wrong. You know, from last to 10th or whatever. He'd managed to get 10th because Kimi had an issue.
That's Kimi's fault.
It is Kimi's fault, and I'm grading him for that as a result. But
and he beat Lance.
Yeah, and that car is absolutely awful.
I can't compare Vettel's drive to somebody like Hamilton's drive, who I also gave an A. So I'm giving it a high B.
Vettel's just as good as Hamilton's.
Vettel gained 10 positions in an Aston Martin.
With three retirements.
To be fair, I've just...
Some of those cars were rubbish.
Ocon was getting beaten anyway because he'd had a crash. Alonso was getting penalties left, right and centre or not, whatever, having an argument with the stewards. And Gasly just had a broken car all weekend.
I love the way this is the opposite of last year when we'd always be a bit more harsh on Vettel's grades and then everyone would be like, you're so harsh to Vettel. And I can't believe the fans have voted him a B as well when he went from 18th to 10th.
Whoa, spoilers. We've not got Katie's. Okay, have you gone for a B, Katie?
I'm going to go for a high B.
Well, it still averages as an A because we've voted.
It does. Well done, Tommy. We did this instead. And he did an amazing little thing on the microphone, didn't he? Where he was asking the fans not to litter, which is just like, bless him. I don't know if you guys saw that, did you or not?
I didn't actually, no.
It was in the pre-race interview when they go around on the truck. He basically just said, don't litter, which is...
Did you see the person that was dressed up as that Mike Myers scary Halloween character that was...
Oh, yeah, like, just in the background somewhere.
Yeah. No, I didn't see that. So Vettel gets an A from us and a B from the fans. Lance Stroll, C.
Mm. Yeah, C.
C.
Fans gave him a C. Pierre Gasly, can't really rate him.
C.
Yeah, C. He dropped behind the start. And he's unlucky. I know.
Incredible. I was like, what universe am I in? So Gasly, C from us and C from the fans. Yuki Tsunoda, P9, points.
Minimum.
B, definitely.
It was a high B.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with Yuki for that one. I'm sure you are as well, Tommy.
I think that was it's definitely his best race in a long time. I'm hoping that it's, more of this, please. But yeah, I think it's still a high B.
Yeah.
He's a rookie though, isn't he? But he has been in the car for a while now. So
he's had 16 races or something?
Yeah, fair.
Tommy, until the very last race, has come back. Well, Yuki is a rookie.
Yeah,
it's his first race of the season.
Yeah, in Abu Dhabi. He is a rookie.
Yeah.
B.
Cool. And the fans gave Tsunoda a B. Fernando Alonso. C.
C.
Yeah.
Fans gave him a C. Ocon. He got punted, didn't he, by Latifi. And then was just nowhere, so couldn't really do much, then had to retire. Do you reckon Alpine retired both of their cars just for banter?
For banter?
Yeah, just like, you know, we're out of contention.
Get some TV time.
Yeah,
show us pushing them into the pits.
Yeah, in terms of, I guess, the cost cap and stuff as well. Like, yeah, maybe. Don't want to go, especially with the bumps around here. I don't know. I think maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a bit of a late call, like, because there was, five, six laps to the end when they retired Alonso?
Oh, for Alonso, I think that one's
late. But Ocon wasn't that far behind. Hmm. He was like in, don't know when he retired.
Yeah, it's a C for Ocon there as well.
Yeah, C for Ocon.
It is indeed a C. So congratulations to Esteban Ocon for a C. Kimi Raikkonen. I mean, D?
D, yeah, definitely. Threw away
Good, yeah, oh yeah, he binned it. Oh, yeah, he was literally running in point at one point, wasn't he? And then he binned it. Yeah, that's sad, but a D.
That's sad. Yeah, I think it's got to be a D.
And the fans gave him a C, so we are terrible people. Giovinazzi, C.
C.
Finished 11th.
Yeah, another bit of a nothing race, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he actually had a bit of TV time for a change, but it was still a C kind of performance. Reasons, yeah,
yeah, and a C from the fans. George Russell, I mean, had C. to start at the back, made some positions up right at the start. He got up to like 13th, didn't he, right at the beginning?
Did really well.
And then just didn't really go anywhere from there. So we're...
C.
C, yeah, C, I guess. Is that right for you, Katie? Yep,
that's fine for me.
And the fans gave him a C as well. We're on a C train at the moment. Yeah. Latifi punted Ocon. I'm giving him an... I was going to say E, but maybe
I saw...
D.
D. I've gone for D as well.
I've gone for a D as well.
He almost came out of the pits and took his front wing off again.
Oh my God, I know.
Insane, isn't it? The fans gave him a C. Surprising. Didn't think that was a C performance from Latifi. Nikita Mazepin, he had 3 pit stops because apparently his headrest started attacking
him. Yeah, did you see that?
I didn't actually see it. I heard about it.
Incorrectly fastened at the start of the race. So literally from the very first lap, it came undone. So
yeah.
I did wonder how he was like 58 seconds off the pace after lap 5 or something. I was like, this is not great. But it's still a D performance.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was... Where was he compared to Mick in qualifying? Yeah, he wasn't on the pace either. So yeah, D.
The fans gave him an F. Shock. And really? Finally, Mick Schumacher. He was actually doing okay at one point, and I saw him fighting the Williams, and all of a sudden he wasn't.
He was so close to Latifi. Yeah, he said, had I been given 5 more laps, he thinks he would have passed Latifi.
Oh, really? Wow.
Fair play.
Or maybe that's why he was... his own race. You know, when I said, like, he's got nothing to race for.
He was fighting Latifi. Yeah. He was head down trying to catch the Tifi for a really important 15th place.
Still a C, though.
Yes,
it's a C. And the fans gave him a C as well. Predictions for the US Grand Prix. Crash at turn 1. That happened. Thank you very much. Ocon and Latifi. Were you about to question it, Katie? Go on, what were you about to say, huh?
I was going to say, I was expecting a big crash, but...
Oh, sorry. Did I write big?
Fine. Well, if we're playing that way, then
I think that was a great prediction. And
well done,
Red Bull and Mercedes, miles clear of everyone else, I think.
No. Can't go.
What?
Bottas and had to get through into fourth.
They've literally just had an argument about how Perez was so far back.
Yeah,
they were. But that's because he wasn't hydrated, Katie. You've said this.
And well, what about Bottas?
Bottas's problem is highlights the problems in Formula One at the moment.
Why have you suddenly gone really?
You can't. I'm trying to win myself a point here. Verstappen and Hamilton beat Charles Leclerc by 52 seconds.
If you said nice Verstappen story. And Hamilton last year of everyone, I would have considered it, but.
Are you the points master now?
Yeah,
all of a sudden?
I am.
Okay, all right. 0 points for that. I get 1 point. Tommy, what was yours?
Mine was Bottas given team orders.
Nope.
And Leclerc top 5 race finish. Yes.
Well done, Katie.
Mine was mechanical failure for one of the championship contenders, which
which
is Bottas the championship contender?
Alonso was in 2012.
Yeah, this one time.
Half a point.
And then Ricciardo finishes ahead of Norris. So
great prediction.
That was a great prediction. One. Well done, Katie. The fans, Kendrick _ Latifi outqualifies Russell. No. F1 Aditya, McLaren double DNF. No. And Mega versus Primus, Mick to score points. No. Predictions for the Mexican Grand Prix. I've gone for Perez team orders. And Tsunoda scores points again.
We discussed this in our podcast, didn't we, about Perez team orders. It's going to be... Mexican fans aren't going to be happy with Red Bull if has to sacrifice a win. Speaking of Perez, I'm going to say he gets his first pole position.
Oh, so if you get that, I probably get mine as well. So let's do that.
Probably.
Let's do that.
And more track limit drama from Alonso, a.k.a.
Shock.
Just straight lines. straight lines.
We've seen it before, haven't we?
Hamilton did it.
I think
Alonso's going to do it. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Just going to gain 8 positions. Katie?
I've gone for a Gasly top five and a Ferrari podium.
Lovely.
Nice.
And Tommy's decided to choose a very similar one for the fans. Ace 12, Adam, both Ferraris on the podium.
Oh, wow. Well, I can change my Ferrari podium if you want.
No, it's okay.
It's okay. Stormboy 172, Russell top five in quali. Tommy, what are you choosing here? Are you trying to make sure the fans score no points for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
And what on earth is that name? Frontrignandini, DNF for one of the Red Bulls. Wow. There you go, then. That is the WTF1 post-race podcast done and dusted. Thank you to the Team WTF1 members watching live. Please do check out Team WTF1 if you want to get involved with that. We do lots of stuff. Discord as well. We got that. There's lots of
karting
stuff flowing about there. Yeah, karting, camping. There's the Mercedes Sim competition, which we've, of course, closed. But there's that coming up for some of the lucky winners. Lots of stuff. Tommy, final thoughts? Led you into a full sense of security like our Matt's in ad mode.
I genuinely don't have any.
No,
everything I needed to
say. No.
That's my final thought.
No, we do not end this podcast until you come up with something. I'm enjoying this. Look at my brain whirring away.
Charles Leclerc is underrated. Okay, that's my final thought. Because I have seen a lot of people that have when we put the stat about how science is doing well compared to Leclerc, a lot of people are like, oh, Ferrari's golden chart's not as good as I think. And I think that's a load of rubbish. And he showed in that race that I think if he, gets a car that he can be up there with Max and Lewis, I think he would be. So there's my final thought.
Interesting. My final thought to add on to that is that I think he's just a step below the likes of Max Verstappen, because we've seen many mistakes from Charles, which is something that needs to iron out.
I don't rate him as high, but I think he'd be in that.
There or thereabouts for a few wins. Yeah, I mean, he's had two pole positions this year, which is
2019.
And he's had two poles this year, feels like 4 years ago. Katie, what's your final thought?
My final thought is congratulations to Jamie Chadwick for winning the W Series Championship this weekend, which was an amazing drive. Also, shout out to Alice Powell, because they had a good championship battle. But now Jamie Chadwick will hopefully accrue enough super license points that we may see her in some FP1 sessions next year. She's a Williams talent.
If she can afford it.
Yeah, which you also get a nice chunk of money.
You do get a lot of money for winning W Series.
You get a quarter of a million.
I guess that's nothing, is it?
That's like 2 minutes in FP1.
Yeah.
But hey, hopefully with the Williams, she's been part of the Williams family for quite a long time. It'd be really nice.
Yeah, very good.
She's a very good driver and a very nice person as well. And so it'd be really good to see her in an FP1. Fingers crossed, but Williams, I think, might have to subsidize that a little bit to allow that to happen. But we'll see. Well, thank you very much for your final thoughts. Much better yours, Katie, than Tommy's.
Yeah, I had nothing really.
Me and Katie are now.
Tommy's now going to get some rest. Tired wave.
Tommy's hit the tired wave for no reason.
I've got for family over, and my little 2-year-old niece who was watching motorsport, so she's converted, which is that should have been my final thought. My little niece is now converted to motorsport because she pointed at the screen and said, "Wow, cars!" when she was watching the W Series.
Cute.
So, subscribed to WTF1?
Yes.
Okay.
I made her.
You made her a YouTube account.
She definitely understands YouTube at 2 years old.
You're not a Formula One fan if you're not. Anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for watching and listening. Please give us 5 stars, a thumbs up wherever you are. If you do enjoy it. Katie's already literally ready to get to bed. So she's like, just end the podcast, Matt. That's been amazing. Thank you, everybody. Lots more content coming out. Of course, we've got a week break before we then go to Mexico, where we will be bringing you all the content once again. Thank you, everybody. Thank you to Tommy. Thank you to Katie. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, Katie.